Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Produce Buzzers Podcast. We are so happy you have joined us today, and I think you will be too after the show is over, because you will learn a lot about fresh fruits and vegetables, how to select and store them, how to prepare and cook them, and surprising facts about their history and origin. We hope it inspires you to eat more fresh fruits and vegetables, not only for your health, but also for your delight and pleasure as you explore their amazing world of taste and delicious flavors. Eating more of them will transform your life in so many positive ways. So settle back, relax, and get ready for another delicious adventure with the Produce Buzzers. Welcome again to another Produce Buzzers podcast. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Edwin Stepp, the executive editor of ProduceBuzz.com. I am joined once again by Teresa Nolan, president and founder of Produce Buzz, along with Rick Stepp and Cynthia Benedetto, both contributing editors to Produce Buzz. Today, we want to pass along some interesting information we gleaned at a recent fresh produce conference and trade show. Produce Buzzers, we had a good time at the Southeast Produce Council trade show in early March. We were there with 2,600 other participants and people who were attending the show, mostly growers and shippers of fresh produce, and they each had a booth showing all about their products and what they sell. And the people they were trying to show it to were mostly retailers, the produce buyers of supermarkets around the country, Publix, Kroger, although Rick, you said Kroger wasn't there.
Correct.
Nobody was there. Albertsons, you know, all the big grocery stores where, you know, most all of them, even if they're not from the Southeast, were there attending to see what was coming up for the year, what was new, and to make some deals for the coming year. It's a great conference, and we had a lot of fun there. We interviewed four or five people, of which we have already published a couple of those interviews. So you can look for those on the podcast, some interesting people there. One thing, they had a few sessions that were educational, and one of the sessions was called The Power of Produce. And they do this every year at this conference. It's basically a look at the year and what has trended in produce consumption in the past year. And in the session, they went through a lot of detail of the study. The study was conducted or sponsored by the Southeast Produce Council and also by the Food Marketing Institute, FMI. And they hire a company to gather all the statistics, mostly from retail stores, the data that comes from retail stores on what people are buying. They also survey a lot of people, consumers, on what they are buying and what their preferences are in the world of produce. And but basically, the session we sat in went through 10 top findings of the study. And I thought it'd be interesting for us to discuss that today and pass on some of this information to you, our listeners. So the Produce Buzzers have looked the info over. I'm going to start asking them the question, what did you find most interesting about the top findings in the Power of Produce for 2022?
So I was looking at the FMI sheet, and the most interesting thing I found is that people are letting other people pick out their produce with online shopping.
Yeah, right. Did they just get every man that has it delivered? There is no way. I'm going through my girlfriends and those nuts, you know, whether they work outside the home or not, which I have to give a shout out to Adrian, who always listens to us.
Oh, yes. Shout out to Adrian. Adrian, thank you so much for being a regular listener.
But there is no way my girlfriends are going to let somebody else pick out their produce. They let me, but there is no way some random stranger.
Yeah.
So that I think the finding there, Teresa, if I'm right, is people who are buying online are letting people pick their produce. And it's not people, obviously, if you go to the store, you're not letting someone pick your produce. But if you're buying online and having it shipped to you, yeah, yes. I would never trust that. I could let anybody.
And that's not to disparage online shopping, because I know a lot of people, they don't have time. So they're going to do it.
Yeah.
But
certain items. Go ahead.
I was surprised that 86% of online shoppers include fresh produce in their purchases.
Wow.
So yeah, that
was. Teresa, how many times have you shopped online?
I have shopped online, but it was always hardcore grocery items. And the only place I've shopped online is Walmart. So for groceries anyway. Mm-hmm. I've done a lot of other.
How many times have you done that?
Oh, probably 10 or 15 times, but it's always specific brands, and they, you know, that there's not a lot of room for error.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe some produce.
Okay. I've shopped for produce twice and was satisfied once and not satisfied once.
What items did you buy?
Well, like one of the big retailers, it was curbside pickup.
Yeah.
So somebody else picked everything out and they brought it out to my car, and I had a big bag of collard greens and they were almost rotten.
Oh yeah.
It's like, told us about, you know, any moron should have known that, be able to look at that and see that there was decay in there.
Right.
And that was back when you didn't get out of the car. You open the trunk and they put it in your trunk and then you drive away.
So you couldn't inspect it before you left.
I could have waited till they went back in the store and then gone back and looked at it. And in fact, I did do that. I just remembered I did do that. But then the person was already gone back inside, and I thought, I'm just going to take this home, and they're okay if I cook them. And they sent me a survey, how was my experience? And I explained everything about the bad collard greens and never got a response back. This retailer, you'd think that would be like a red flag, like, oh, apologizing all over themselves for something that possibly could have even caused somebody to get sick, you know, if they ate it raw.
Oh yeah,
you were stupid enough to eat it raw. With that,
you know, even when I pick out something and make a mistake, I take it back to the store. They always take it back without question and either give you more, you know, another of the same product or your money back.
Yeah. What do you mean you make a mistake? That you chose the wrong item, or
no,
you just by accident took the you know, bruised beyond recognition avocado?
Yeah, that. The bruised
Teresa
beyond recognition.
Would never.
Teresa would never. I was going to say, are you kidding?
You know, with an avocado, if somebody has been going through the display, squishing on them to see if they're mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. You can't tell that till you get it home and cut it. Or maybe they somehow in the chain of getting it to the store, it was refrigerated before it was preconditioned, and the avocado is black inside, and you can tell when you cut into them if they've had cold damage.
Just a quick explanation to our listeners, Teresa, about cold damage that you mentioned. Avocados should not be refrigerated before they are treated to ripen them. But once that's happened and the ripening process has started, you can put them in the refrigerator and they'll be fine. But if they get chilled before that, they get the cold damage and it causes black streaks on the flesh.
So those kind of things. In fact, I've taken avocados back a couple of times for that reason. And one time I picked up a bag of apples, and you know how the label can keep you from seeing everything in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
You can find out there was a bad spot in the apples or whatever. So that kind of thing.
I don't buy bags of apples because of that reason. And like I did because I was forced to buy some Bosque pears, and one of them was
somebody hold you at gunpoint, the Bosque pears commission.
Yes, it was a ransom situation. I wanted a damn Bosque pear. I needed it for like a, you know, I needed it for a recipe. Like meanwhile, like you're
addicted to Bosque
pears. When I had to deal with chefs, and they're like, I have to have a Bosque pear. I'm like, change your damn, you know, recipe.
Yeah, we're gonna have to do an intervention on you. Get you off those Bosque pears. Anyway, so you the Bosque pears, you were forced to buy them, and you bought a bag, and you were disappointed, or you were okay?
Well, I don't even remember how many came in there, but let's say 8, you know, but one of them was, I couldn't even cook with it.
Yeah.
And did you take it back?
I might not have. Sometimes actually most of the time I do return items because I'm mad as a hornet by the time I get at home and, you know, and I'm there, you know, with, inspecting the bags and pulling out the, display that I know they're just like, oh shit, here she comes again. Because like this morning I wanted to make that, raw root vegetable salad. So I started with the jicama and it had like a little bit of mold on it, but so I was like, let me just wipe it off. But I would prefer not to take it home with me. And, you know, so then I went to the produce guy, I go, hey, can I just have paper towel, wipe it off? And he goes, no, let me rinse it. I'm like, cool. So he rinsed it and he's like, I don't think this is good. He goes, this is kind of, you know, soft here, there. And he goes, and I go, that was the best one in the bunch. And he goes, looked at me like, you're kidding. And so like you go over to the bin and they're all like moldy. That's a science project at that point. And so like he dumped them all. And because I don't know if jicama should be refrigerated. I've eaten it, I cook with it, but I just don't know if that's one of those things like a you could have it on an end cap and maybe it would.
All right. We got to get the answer for that for our listeners. Now we can't be ignorant about any fruit or vegetable. We got to come up with the answer. Should you refrigerate jicama?
And that's with a J.
Yes, I know. The ideal storage temperature is 55 to 59 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay, so then it was in the correct place, but I think that where they have it in this particular store, they have that misting situation, right. Which yeah, I so get the idea of the, yeah, I think it should be dry. And then, but the misting, sometimes it's more than a mist. Mm-hmm. It's a little shower.
Yeah.
And it could have sat there for a while too. Maybe
this stuff sat there for a while. Let me tell you.
Is it that temperature they should keep for up to 4 months?
No, these were not there for 4 months. Because I buy them like the last time I bought it, it was not 4 months ago.
You don't know how long the grocery store had them sitting in inventory either. So that's the missing link.
Jicama is not one of those things that flies off the shelf. I would
exactly.
the first time I ate jicama, and when I was a waiter at the Pasadena Hilton in California, I'd never heard of it before, and they had them sliced up for hors d'oeuvres with hors d'oeuvres and things, and it was just like an amazing flavor.
It's a very unique. It's not bland. But it's not the show. It's not the center of the whatever you're eating. But it has the texture I really like, and I don't know the flavor.
They're crunchy and they are a little bit of juice. They're not
yes. They're not sweet, but they're little tiny. You know, sweet. They're just pleasant. What can you do with jicama? There's a few things. It's wait, maybe we do like a salad.
Well, the last Produce Marketing Association show that I went to, there was a booth dedicated totally to jicama. And they had all kinds of products made from it. They had like tortilla wraps made from jicama. They also had tortilla chips and even already made ready-to-eat tacos that were made from those tortilla wraps made from jicama.
Have you ever put jicama in salsa?
This they had some at their booth. They had a jicama salsa. I remember that.
Yeah. Right.
I think that would jicama could be a filler mm-hmm. that would give it it would kind of be like celery in the tuna fish. Like it doesn't really have a flavor, but it gives texture. I think that would be jicama would be a really good one for that.
Yeah.
To Rick's point, like it would be a nice, what do you say, a vehicle for salad dressing? So like iceberg
delivery system.
So yeah. Jicama would also be a delivery system.
For what?
For a lot of stuff. You could probably put like nuts and a roasted pepper and balsamic vinegar and mozzarella on it. Boom.
Yeah. Or substitute it for potato chips and use it with a dip.
Raw?
Yeah. Like dip it in avocado in a guacamole or something. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be good.
Instead of a chip. Cut it up like.
I'm gonna put like a bag of chips here. And then I'm gonna put a plate of jicama. What do you think I'll have to refill first?
My sister-in-law has a Christmas party every year. It's like a really special Christmas party for adults only. And all the women dress up in really nice dresses and stuff. And
I thought you were going to say in lingerie since it's adult.
Since it's only adults, right?
And so, but everybody tries to bring really fancy hors d'oeuvres, you know? And we were kind of running a little bit late and not figuring out what we were going to take. I said, let's just slice up the put red grapefruit wedges on a big plate and put those out there. Because when people eat all this rich food, they're going to want something to cleanse their palate once in a while. And Lori kind of reluctant. Oh, okay. We'll take grapefruit slices. And man, those things were gone within the first hour. Every one of them. We had a whole big platter full.
No. The host took them and dumped them outside. You thought people were eating them?
Oh, don't say that. People who are trying to watch what they eat, look for that kind of thing at a party.
Yeah. I think
are you watching what you eat at a party?
Yeah, if you're really diligent. I've heard people at parties go, there's nothing here I'm supposed to eat. I've heard that comment at parties before. So it's always a good idea to have, you know, okay, you're living it up. It's a party, but.
Isn't that what the crudité is for?
If they put it out, sometimes they don't. So.
Was the cartoon, the Lucy cartoon you sent me, Teresa, on the Super Bowl. She said, if anybody shows up with a veggie platter, you'll be penalized for unnecessary roughage.
Yes.
I will say this. That is the last thing I will eat at a party is raw carrots, raw
fry,
broccoli, why? Raw cauliflower. It's. I just don't really care for eating it that way for an hors d'oeuvre. But
egg. You're not helping. We're trying to encourage people.
I know.
Oh, you don't like raw celery. It's got to be smeared with something. But you don't like, in general, raw carrots?
Oh, yeah, I like them, but not like, yummy, here's some raw carrots.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, right. And you're going to try to, like, slide in the jicama? Uh-uh. Move it aside, buddy. Give me those chips.
Jicama, though, is not dry. It's got a lot of juice in it. You know, it's like when you bite into it, it really.
Yeah, it's crispy and juicy. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But it's not the same as a nice salty chip.
If I can find a jicama, at my local Walmart. I'm going to experiment with it and see how that could tie in with Cinco de Mayo. Something.
Well, like you said it already. Use it as to dip into the guacamole. I think that'd be great. Yeah. You know, if you
would
were.
Or hummus.
It would be really good in. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or salsa. Put salsa on top of the jicama.
Yeah. Well, you talked about the jicama salsa.
Yeah.
Put it in the salsa.
I've never tried to cut jicama up into round circles like a chip, but I've had it like French fries.
That's usually the way I see it. Yeah.
But can you ask Cynthia? She probably knows. Can you take a jicama and make round circle chip like things from it? Or would it
I suppose if you had a wide enough mandolin. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it isn't so dense that you couldn't slide it through.
Okay.
But the problem is the diameter, because usually they're quite long. The diameter is large. So you'd have to, what you could do is slice them, because you wouldn't want them, I don't think, as thin as a mandolin would do, because then you wouldn't want it flimsy, but then you could just cut it with a cookie cutter.
But you could, you can adjust the depth on a mandolin. You can adjust it for thickness. You could cut the jicama into maybe triangles almost, because if it's roundish, you could cut it into little
triangles
and then do it that way.
Yeah.
It'd be like a substitute for Fritos or Dorito chips or something.
Yeah. Well, that's a nice try. That's really cute, Teresa. They are never going to substitute Fritos or Doritos.
Okay. All right. What else? Did anybody else?
I understand they also substitute cubic zirconia for a diamond, but come on, let's not get crazy.
But it looks pretty. And no children were harmed in making of the cubic zirconia.
Okay. Did anybody else find anything interesting or surprising in this power of produce top findings?
Ed, when you had asked about interesting facts, I didn't see it on this summary sheet here, but the most interesting one I heard when we were at
during the session, yeah, they talked a lot more details.
Was that a certain percentage of people eat fresh vegetables for a dessert.
That was quite a high percentage, if I remember right. It was like 30%.
And that's what makes me wonder about some of these surveys. When you pull people off the side and ask them questions, they just give you, sometimes maybe they just give you some answer off the top of their head. And
yeah,
it's not even, they're not even really telling the truth about.
Right. Well, I'm sure that happens.
But like a lot of times I'll answer a survey about what I would want to do. Like, did you increase your consumption of fresh fruits and vegetables?
Right.
Yes, because I want to do it, but I didn't actually do it.
Right.
Well, here's some things that could be vegetables for dessert. Zucchini bread.
That's a fruit.
Oh, okay. All right.
But we use it mostly as a veggie.
Yeah, most people.
But you're right. Technically, it's a fruit.
But how much zucchini is in zucchini bread? I mean, like carrot, it's mostly cake, the bread.
Carrot cake, you know.
Cake, cake bread.
I mean, well, if you remember when we asked the girl from Frida's, she said they have recipes for desserts with their purple sweet potatoes. But they were not just purple sweet potatoes that people were eating for dessert.
They were putting this purple sweet potatoes in pies and cakes and other kinds of confections, not just eating the purple sweet potatoes on their own.
Okay, here's a list of 9 vegetables you can eat as a dessert, all right? You can put potatoes into your cupcakes. You can grate zucchini into your brownie batter. Stir corn into ice cream.
Oh, that's
I have to check that recipe out. Whip avocados into pudding. There again, it's another fruit, right?
It's also another thing that you could eat without the avocado.
Yeah. Stir carrots into your cookies. Beat beets into your cupcake batter. Gives them the icing a little red.
That sounds color good
too. Yeah. That was puree sweet. Yeah. Pardon?
It beats in your icing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it would sweeten
puree
it.
Sweet potato. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying it's beets, or you know, that a lot of sugar in beets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Puree sweet potatoes into mousse. Stir pumpkin into cake mix. Puree squash into your cheesecake. So those are nine, and not all of those are vegetables, but.
And anyway, you also have to add them to something else that would be a dessert, but they're an additive to a dessert that people would enjoy. But I'm just trying to think of, like, you know, carrot salad could be considered a dessert. You know, when you make carrot salad and you put raisins
in it? Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
That's probably the best really one that sweet. We've mentioned, the carrot salad. Because it's mostly carrots with the raisins.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good dessert. One of the things on there was that, you know, people link fresh produce to healthful eating and specific nutritional and health benefits. And 6 in 10 shoppers purchase fresh fruits and vegetables to deliver on specific health benefits, which is something, you know, we've been talking about a lot, that consumption is not going up. It's been stagnant for many years, and only a very small percentage of Americans get the recommended daily intake of fruits and vegetables. It's like 13% or something. It's very low. But at least shoppers are aware that fruits and vegetables make them healthier, and they are consciously shopping for them for that purpose. So,
yeah, during this last, you know, of course, during the COVID times, if people were going to start eating healthy, you would think that would have been when they would do it, because they've shown that if you are obese or if you have other comorbidities like diabetes, things like that, which are also connected to obesity, that you're more likely to get really sick, and you'd be likely to get sick from other things too if you have that those problems.
Yep.
So you would think that we've been through a good test for how serious people are about changing their diets, you know, and some people did, but a lot of people, they went to the comfort foods, and that was where
the
they
stress, the stress, you know, actually a lot of the data is showing that the consumption even dropped during COVID.
Yeah,
and, because of the stress and, you know, it's being
stuck. We actually ate healthier during the COVID thing.
I think I did too, but
just because we didn't go out to eat as much.
Yeah, right.
And if you go to the grocery store with a list and you stick with your list and don't use emotion in your grocery shopping, like, oh no, it's COVID, I better get like 10 bags of chips in my cart because I'm stuck at home and it's COVID.
They might run out of chips.
No, but don't you want to have the impulse items?
Oh, I want to have them. I'm just saying, if you eat in your own home and you only bring food into your own home that is healthy, there's a lot better chance than if you go out to eat, where it's like, oh yeah, I'll have the dessert too, please.
It's very difficult in a restaurant. You know, you go in and you say, for me, I go in and I say, can you cook that without salt? Can you do it without oil? When you start doing that, and then they still deliver a product to you that you can see has oil all over it, you can see that it's quite difficult to eat out. But some restaurants are really good at helping you with it. So,
yeah. Well, some of the other things that were in the top findings: price is now on par with ripeness and appearance for consumers buying fresh produce because of the inflation that's occurring. Convenience items, value-added produce items, continue to boost sales and growing. Because of people, less and less time. 45% of shoppers frequently take to convenient vegetable solutions. That's like, you know, we already discussed jicama being sliced, buying it sliced or not. A lot of shoppers want to go ahead and get it sliced, and they're willing to pay a little extra for that. And COVID brought grocery sales, online grocery sales surging, and that's continuing to happen. People are more and more shopping online, even though things have loosened up a bit. This is one that I thought was interesting. 6 in 10 shoppers purchase fresh produce at farmers markets now, at least they say. And they believe that it's fresher or better tasting, even though it's generally higher cost and much higher cost, at least the farmers markets I go to. So that was something that I thought was a bit interesting. And in the same line, 52% of shoppers prefer the common fruits and vegetables, you know, apples, oranges, the things they know, but 48% would like to be introduced to uncommon or seasonal varieties that they've not tried before. So that's a pretty good portion of the population, about half the population wanting to know about some different kinds of fruits and vegetables to mix up their eating habits. So those were the most interesting things I thought from these findings. Anybody else?
I agree with you about the farmer's market part. I can remember, though, going to a local farmer's market near my house several years back and looking at the assortment of fruits and vegetables they had there and knowing that that fruit had come from the wholesale market in Boston, because there was no way that was being grown locally.
Right.
First of all, it didn't even look like a local product.
Yeah.
And secondly, it wasn't available in this area at that time. There's no way they were growing it. And right. It reminds me of being on a plane with a man when I was working for the California Strawberry Advisory Board, and it was in February, and he asked me what I did for a living, and I told him, and he said, "People don't need California strawberries back here. I've been getting excellent berries at my local grocery store, and I mean, they are wonderful." And this, he was from Maine, and he was getting strawberries from California or Florida at that time. And I thought, well,
and he thought they were local.
He thought they were locally grown in February, you know? So
Teresa, is that when you had been traveling for a while? So presumably you were flying first class because you were crazy mileage. But, you know, it, just somebody like that, it would just go, I wouldn't even waste my time.
I just explained to him that it had to come from far away because I asked him to, if there was still snow on the ground in Maine. He said yes. And I said, how would you think that they would be able to grow these strawberries in Maine at this time? You know, I just tried to make it kind of a Socratic teaching moment. You know,
yeah, you wouldn't say like, you idiot, did you see California on the label?
We went to the farmer's market in Montclair, New Jersey, which is, you know, not too far from New York City, with my son and his wife a few years ago. And they have a requirement though that it has to be within a certain number of miles for you to sell it at that farmer's market. And I was kind of amused because I saw tomatoes, the sign said Jersey fresh tomatoes, so much a pound. And I looked in the baskets they had, and they were grown in Ontario, Canada.
But they had on
the sign
off.
They had, it was local New Jersey fresh tomatoes, but they left the stickers on the tomatoes.
Oh my goodness.
Those were probably grown in a greenhouse in Ontario.
Right, exactly. What they
do. Yeah, California farmers markets are very strict. They do not let you sell. We had a friend who grew organic table grapes. And one summer, Haley wanted to earn some money. So we talked to him about selling his grapes. He lived way up in Fresno, and we were in the LA area, Pasadena specifically. And he set us up with his grapes to sell at the local farmers markets. And they came by and they checked. And she one day was there, and she did not have his certificate to show them. And they were, you know, they didn't fine or anything, but they said, you can't come back if you don't prove that these are coming from where you say they're coming from. So they checked.
Well, outside, Keo lives in Silver Lake, and outside her building, twice a week, there's a farmer's market. And I think for her, it's just easier to just pick up what she needs and then go upstairs, so she's not lugging it out of the grocery store.
That's great.
Yeah, and places like California and Florida can be strict about that because they're growing stuff year round. But New Jersey is not going to have, you know. There's a farmer's market that I've seen several times when I was in New York City in Union Square. And that looked pretty authentic to me. It only takes place in the summertime, but you know, there's a lot of agriculture out on Long Island. Most all of that stuff was coming from Long Island, according to the signs. The family, you know, and some.
We're on the way out of Long Island, quickly run by the market and pick it up.
Yeah. Back here, you see during the growing season, you see some crops, but you also see a lot of banana bread and things like that people have baked locally, and jams and things like that. So farmers markets, some are really great and some of them, they're just fine because it's okay to have California grapes, you know, even if you live in
doing deceptive advertising.
Right. And if the product looks good and it's convenient for you, go for it.
Well, you're not going to get the same grapes in New York as you get in California. You know, they don't grow the same type. So if you want Thompson seedless or those red seedless grapes, you're not going to, those aren't growing in many places other than California.
Yeah.
If you want that kind of thing.
There
are the most famous markets. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, there were things I would go, we had a farmer's market every Saturday just down the street from, you know, 0.2 mile down the street from our house. And man, there were some things that came into that market that were worth paying 2 or 3 times for because the flavor was just unbelievable.
Yeah. One of the most famous food markets in the country, possibly the most famous, Pike Place Market in Seattle. My son and his wife used to live within walking distance of that. And, you know, you go in there and you see the fish and it's on ice and there's big, huge fish. And you think, wow, they must've caught this right off the coast here. And, you know, and so I'm in a produce business. It's believable. Wow, this would be great to buy some of this fish. But then when you go through the produce, they talk about local produce, but it's the same story we've been telling. You know, there's strawberries from California. There's apples from Washington. It's not really, of course, you're in Washington, but it's not as local as a lot of people think it's local when it's really not.
Yeah.
So it's not really much different than going in the grocery store for your produce.
Did you see them throwing the fish in that market?
Yes.
I don't know why they throw them. Is it when somebody buys it, they throw it to them? What's the story? I've seen it before. I've been in there, but I couldn't remember why they throw the fish.
Probably just to put on a show, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Flying fish. That's what they say.
That's it. Very good.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Well, speaking of states, what are the state fruits of various states? Do any of you know off the top of your head what a specific state and what their state fruit is?
I would guess that Florida's state fruit is oranges.
Yes. Congratulations. You're right.
Georgia peach.
How did you guess that one? Georgia's not the only state that the peach is the state fruit.
South Carolina.
You guys are smart today. Really smart.
New Jersey peaches.
That's not a bad guess because they grow a lot of peaches. Yes, I think we discussed that before, but no, what do you think?
Blueberries. All right. Well, yeah.
Massachusetts cranberries.
Yes. And Massachusetts is not the only state that the cranberry is the state fruit.
Wisconsin.
That's on fire today. What is this all about?
I'm just surprised it is the state fruit of Wisconsin.
I said Wisconsin.
I know. I said you were right. Said.
Okay. I thought that like Rick was trying to elbow my answer.
No, they grow more cranberries in Wisconsin than they do in Massachusetts. Yeah, but I was surprised that's their state fruit though, because
yeah, they don't have any other fruits, so that's they got to pick that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Potatoes are not a fruit. That's
right. Sour cherries, I think we were talking about at one point. Wisconsin was the largest grower of those at one point.
Michigan. Michigan is the largest
grower. Now, but Wisconsin used to be.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So who else has blueberry as their state fruit?
Oh, boy.
Maine.
Yes. Good guess.
Do any states have more than one state fruit, or is it always?
Yeah. Good? Yep. There are a couple. Kentucky.
Yeah.
You want to guess what theirs are?
Is California strawberries? Oh, man. Is it citrus? Or, I was going to say.
I love buzzing you, Cynthia. Mm, mm. Come on, guess again so I can buzz you wrong.
Well, come on.
I would guess that California has oranges also. But
I just said citrus.
No, but that's all inclusive. Yeah.
Would it be like their tree fruit?
It is a tree fruit.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
It's not those, but it is a tree fruit.
Nectarine, peaches. Peaches, plums. Nectarine.
This is fun. I'm finally
apples?
Stopping. you're all going to groan when I tell you the answer.
Avocados.
Avocado is the state fruit of California.
That's the state fruit of California.
Well, you know, I would like to see when these things were voted on. Because, you know, if it was done back in the 1930s, it probably would have been oranges.
But that's a good point, Rick. And a lot of states, there's a lot of states that have not ever designated a state fruit. Alaska, Arizona, Colorado, Hawaii. You'd think Hawaii would have been pineapple.
That'd be like pineapple, right?
Yeah. Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Maryland, Michigan. You think Michigan would have a state fruit as much fruit as they grow.
We better talk to
What about Washington State? That's either like some sort of berry or...
Oh, come on, Cynthia. This is easy, Washington State. Come on.
Apples. So then would Oregon be pears?
Good. You got that.
Wow, that's great.
I would have almost said blackberries or something for that. A lot of states have apple as their state fruit, but some have specific varieties designated. Anybody want to guess which states, first of all, have apple as their state fruit, and then maybe some guesses on...
Would New York have apple?
Not a specific variety. There's one that Rick should get.
Minnesota Honeycrisp?
Crisp apple. Minnesota.
So the Honeycrisp is actually the state fruit.
That's according to the research I did.
Okay.
And New Jersey, is it New Jersey? Hold on. Nope. Rhode Island has a specific variety, which I'd never heard of, and probably none of you have either, so you're not going to be able to guess it. But if you want to try.
A type of apple.
Yeah, it's a variety. I know what the Macoun apple is.
Wine staff.
No. Nope, it's the Rhode Island greening apple.
Yeah.
What do you think Texas is?
Oh, that's good. Oh, come on. Yes, you should guess.
Citrus?
This. Well, more specifically?
Grapefruit.
Yeah.
More specifically, and then I'll give that to you, but it's red grapefruit.
Right.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's really all they grow in Texas is red grapefruit.
Vermont also has apple as their state fruit. What do you think North Carolina's state fruit is?
I hope it's apples.
No, sorry.
Well, it can't be.
I actually know the answer to this, but I'll let the rest of you guess.
Blueberries? Watermelons?
This is an unusual fruit.
I've heard that before, yeah. So I knew.
A lot of our listeners probably don't even know what a scuppernong is, but it's a wild, it was a wild grape. They grow them commercially now. They're cultivating them, but they've got a really thick skin and very, very sweet. They're really delicious. The scuppernongs and muscadines is the other kind of sister or brother. The muscadine is dark purple and the scuppernong is more of a green yellow color, but they are delicious. I love them.
And muscadines are native fruits. They're not.
Exactly. They grew wild here for many, many years before people were here, I guess.
I'm thinking that scuppernongs are hybrid, but
I don't know. You think so? They weren't not. I thought they were.
I mean, it's possible they are, but. Yeah,
right. There's some states, other states that have some very strange, I won't say strange, but unusual fruits. North Dakota.
Pawpaws.
No. There is a state that has pawpaw as their state fruit. And it's one that has two.
Louisiana?
Mississippi.
No. Ohio.
Oh, my goodness.
And Ohio has two state fruits. You were asking who has two state fruits. The tomato and the pawpaw are Ohio's state fruits. I don't know why some states get to choose two.
Yeah. We've mentioned several items that would be very interesting for the podcast. Pawpaws, scuppernongs.
Your memory's not very good. We talked about pawpaws in the podcast, one of the earlier.
Oh, that's right.
I did a little bit on it, but we could do more on it. West Virginia has a specific variety of apple, which is much more widely known. Any guesses?
No.
I don't know why this is. I meant to look into why they would have chosen this, but it's the Golden Delicious apple.
Wow.
Some reason they wanted to designate that.
Maybe that's where it was developed.
Could be. I guess that's possible. Yeah. Missouri doesn't have a state fruit, but they have a state nut. It's not a person, by the way. Just the black walnut is Missouri's state nut. There were other states that had state nuts. California had state nuts as well. And they listed a bunch of them, walnuts and pistachios and almonds. So...
Does anyone have a watermelon for their state fruit?
No, but Oklahoma has watermelon as their state vegetable. No joke. It's true.
What? Say that again?
Oklahoma has designated the watermelon as their state vegetable.
What year was that?
They eat the plant. They eat the plant, the watermelon plant. They don't eat the fruit.
Well, they just eat the leaves.
It's funny because I did an article on Produce Buzz a few years ago, not long after they designated that, and I'll see if I can dig it up, because they already had their state fruit is strawberry. Mm-hmm. Which a lot of states have strawberry. Can you want to guess what other states would have strawberry? They're actually not that easy to guess. You wouldn't think of it. Somebody guessed strawberries for California, which would have made sense. Probably if oranges weren't so obvious for Florida, you would think strawberries could be there. But several other states have strawberry as their fruit. Oklahoma being one. Kentucky, strangely enough. Louisiana has what they call a Louisiana strawberry, which I've never heard of, but that's their state fruit. Okay, so I found this article. I'll read a little bit of it to you. Oklahoma made the watermelon its official state vegetable. That's right, the official vegetable, not the official fruit. This controversy is not like the longstanding debates about the fruit or veggie status of the tomato or the avocado. We all understand why there might be some confusion on those more savory foods, but who in the right mind would call a watermelon a vegetable? Everyone knows it's a fruit, right? Apparently everyone except for some fruit ignorant Okies.
Oh no.
Some Oklahoma lawmakers just can't accept the watermelon as a vegetable, and they are going to do something about it. A new bill was introduced this week in the Oklahoma legislature to repeal that official designation. After all, Oklahoma's produce recognition reputation is on the line here. We can already hear the jokes roaring up from Texas. But before you laugh too hard at the Okies, realize that the National Watermelon Association says that since watermelons grow on vines, technically they can be considered a fruit or a vegetable. And according to the Watermelon Board, the Latin name for watermelon is Citrullus lanatus of the botanical family Cucurbitacea, which makes it a cousin to cucumbers and squash. And if you've been
also fruits.
Yes, I know. Technically, they are fruits, but it's interesting that the Watermelon Association says they can be either.
Well, now we need to ask. Oh, was that it? Or?
Yeah, that's all I was going to read. There's more.
Now we need to ask, what could you make with a watermelon that would be like a vegetable? Well, one thing is a watermelon rind.
That's true. Pickled watermelon rind. That's
good. You don't even have to pickle it. I used to use them like cucumbers. I would take the rind and chop them up and put them in my salad, just like a cucumber. Not the outer green skin part, but the inner part of the watermelon rind. You know, peel
right,
the
right, skin off. Right,
and
right.
Yeah. If you chop those up, they taste just like cucumbers.
How do they do in the microwave, Rick?
Not good. But you put the seeds in the microwave, and you can cook the watermelon seeds in the microwave, and they're very good.
Yeah, that's true. I've had roasted watermelon seeds. First time I had those was when I was in China. They sold those everywhere. I think we probably talked about that one time. But
yeah,
roasted, and you know, they soak them in a salt brine, I think, first, and then they roast them, and they're very good.
Yeah.
So that's
don't
funny.
Don't throw your watermelon rind away.
Use it as a vegetable. So the Okies won't be insulted.
I suppose you could saute watermelon rinds like in a stir fry. They'd be fine.
Yeah, that would be interesting to try. We should start trying some of these things.
Maybe in Oklahoma, they just eat the rind and they throw the fruit of the water, the actual fruit.
I don't think so.
Well, I think that's all I got on the state fruits, unless you want to know a specific fruit. Well, North Dakota has the choke cherry, not the choke berry. Choke berry is an aronia berry, isn't it, Rick? Or no, that's different.
Yeah, is it? A choke berry is
an aronia berry. Yeah, but theirs is a choke cherry.
It grows on a little tree. It's very similar, though, as far as nutritional value, I think.
Yeah, I would think so. The cherry.
Right.
But, yeah, so anyway, that was our fun today with the state fruits and other.
I'm guessing the reason that's the state fruit in North Dakota is because of the fact that they probably just grow wild.
Yeah, probably so.
Kind of native to the area. I've never heard of North Dakota apples, but I do know that apples grow in every state. They used to say in every state except Hawaii, but you could grow apples in Hawaii if you got up a high enough elevation.
And what state do you think has pumpkin as its state fruit?
Ohio.
It's one of those Midwestern states, though, isn't it?
Indiana.
I'll never guess it. You might if we go through 50 states, but I would have never
Michigan. Guessed. Michigan.
That was a good bad guess. A good bad okay. guess.
Wisconsin. Wisconsin.
I say Vermont.
Close.
What is the state fruit of Vermont? Did you already mention that?
It's apple.
Oh, it is the apple. Okay.
Yeah, I may not have mentioned it. I was saying there were several states. But this isn't right, but I'm surprised that you didn't say Illinois, Rick, because in your thing about pumpkins, you said the vast majority of pumpkins are grown in Illinois. but that's not Illinois. Illinois has the Gold Rush apple, which I've a variety I've never heard of. Yeah. Have you ever, any of you heard of the Gold Rush apple?
I've heard of it, but I've never seen one.
Yeah. So you give up on the pumpkin?
Arkansas. Yeah.
What did you say, Rick?
Arkansas. All right. We've had enough guesses. So you're
all right. Talk. New Hampshire.
Oh, okay.
You were close with Vermont, Rick. You just got one state too far to the west.
Because I was thinking of those New England pumpkins, you know, like all the, it was like the Pilgrims and Ichabod Crane, wherever he was. Where was Ichabod Crane?
New York.
Fiction.
New York, yeah.
Yeah. Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah.
It's the Hudson River Valley just north of the city. Mm-hmm. So, well, that was fun. I hope you thought it was fun. We didn't bore our guests too much.
Does every state have a state vegetable also?
Well, not every state has a state vegetable, but there are state vegetables. We could do that the next time.
Okay. I'd like to, I think we should write letters to the legislatures of the states that don't have state vegetables.
Well, one of the sites I found listing them said, if your state doesn't have, they were encouraging people, if their state didn't have a state fruit, to write their legislatures to get them to designate a state fruit.
No, we, you know, these legislatures, they, you know, they have enough shit to do. They don't have to be wasting their time on this. Like, you know, let's get everybody's, like, everybody's ass back to work. Let's get them back to work and get some stuff moving.
Hey, wait a second, Cynthia. This is Produce Buzz. We're promoting fruits and vegetables. We need fruits and vegetables designated and highlighted in every way. Get people to eat more of them.
Plus, they're not.
What?
When they're voting on state vegetables, they're not spending money. That's why we need to get diverted into things like this.
No, and usually it's backed
by the growers of the fruit or vegetable anyway in that state. Not always, but oftentimes it is. Well, enough about politics, even though politics is very relevant for this show since it is dominated by a lot of fruits and nuts. So now we switch to another installment of your favorite part of the Produce Buzzers podcast. So, Produce Buzzers podcast fans, it's time for your favorite segment on the Produce Buzzers podcast. Oh, please don't leave. Don't click off. Stay. You've got to listen to this homegrown. Teresa, what is our homegrown of the day?
Okay, so... what do you call a sad strawberry?
What do you call a sad strawberry? Okay, Cynthia, it's your turn to guess. A sad strawberry. Rick, come on.
Gosh, I'm totally stumped on that one.
Oh, a sour puss.
Sad strawberry. Wait a second. Okay, no, I'm not going to get it. Okay, Teresa, what do you call a sad strawberry?
You call a sad strawberry a blueberry.
Oh, that was good. That was good. Yeah.
She's encouraging me.
Cynthia, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. But I'm sad to say we've run out of time for this episode. Thanks again for joining us, and we hope you will join us again next time for some more delicious and nutritious fruit and veggie discussions. Until then, good eating and good night. Well, thank you, listeners, for tuning in to the Produce Buzzers podcast, brought to you by Produce Buzz, the gathering place for lovers of fresh fruits and veggies. We hope you were entertained a bit and educated a lot about fresh produce. Be sure to join us next time, and please tell your friends to do so as well. Like, share, and comment on our Produce Buzz Facebook page, and check out our website at www.producebuzz.com. There you will find articles about fresh fruits and veggies, how to select, store, and prepare them, as well as lots of interesting facts about all the wonderful bounty the earth provides for us. And
Until next time, be fruitful and don't forget to veg out.